When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
My Family Thinks I'm Crazy, a podcast where I, your host, try to give you some tips on how you can explain all this weird, wild, crazy conspiracy stuff to the people you love most, because that's what I've been trying to do for the past 10 years with no success. I've been telling everybody that our government is shady, but every time I do, my family thinks I'm crazy. And they don't want to hear it. They're just like, oh, here we go, Mark. Off again with your...
Mark being Mark again.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, that's the thing about podcasts is when you're on the air, and it's like therapy, you know? If I can't talk to my family about this stuff, I'll talk to you, Matt, and all our listeners.
You'll just tell your whole podcast.
Yeah. So who are we talking about today, Matt?
Art reveals itself in psychic understanding of the inner essence of things and gives form to the relation of man with nothing, with the nature of the absolute.
Into a soul, absolutely free from thoughts and emotion, even the tiger finds no room to insert its fierce claws. One and the same breeze passes over the pines on the mountain and the oak trees in the valley. And why do they give different notes? No thinking, no reflecting, perfect emptiness. Yet therein something moves, following its own course. The eye sees it, but no hands can take hold of it. The moon in the stream. Clouds and mists, they are mid-air transformations. Above them eternally shine the sun and the moon. Victory is for the one, even before the combat, who has no thought of himself, abiding in the no-mindness of great origin.
Think like 9/11 come back up, and it's like this is part of that architecture that I'm seeing in the future, something happening, you know, all these weird narratives. And then sometimes those things will fizzle and I'll be like, well, am I crazy? So I feel like over time I've learned to interpret it more as just being aware of sync is really the message of sync, and the fact that it exists to me is the very real thing. And it's probably the most important thing about sync is just to incorporate it as like a real thing, and then what does that mean to you? That's to me what syncs are constantly trying to do. They're just trying to wake you up to the fact that they exist and that this has implications for what life is and what consciousness is, and that even the smallest thing, like there's a relationship between the external world and you, that is a very healing thing for a lot of people. Easy to forget that a lot of people don't live in that world. They live like in a world where the external reality is matter, and it's hard, and it's when you die, and all these kinds of things that I feel like the message of synchronicity is either ignored because it's not real, or if it's taken in, it can get warped. But I feel like the basic issue of like a synchronicity being true and connecting you to the world, because your experience is having some sort of interaction with the universe, that's already profound enough. But there's deeper layers to it for me, you know, that you can go into. But if I can get people to like see that, I'm happy, because that actually can positively change your life.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the My Family Thinks I'm Crazy podcast. And with us today is quite possibly an unsung legend of this field, somebody who has contributed more in a sort of, I don't want to say ghostwriter way, because his work is available and it's out there, but it's certainly influenced far more people than you may have realized. So without further ado, the inventor, the founder of the term synchromysticism, in so many ways, it's hard to, you know, claim ownership of something so ephemeral, but I think, Jake, you did it. So Jake Coetzee, welcome to the show. It's a pleasure to have you here, sir. For folks who might not know about you with this sort of vague introduction I just gave you, give us a little bit of a clarifying factor there. Tell us a little bit more about yourself.
So I guess it primarily, the work I do comes from a lifelong interest in synchronicity, and then starting to share that online. Sort of at the beginning, early stages of YouTube, I started using that as a way of sharing. I first blogged, and then I figured maybe I'd get more attention with the material by using YouTube. It was just sort of a very new thing at that point. And so I started making videos on YouTube as well and kept blogging for a long time. And then, yeah, just over time, it evolved to the other social media platforms, Instagram and Twitter and all that. And, you know, over the years, I've switched from mediums and, you know, things that I prefer doing. But yeah, I've always just been primarily interested in synchronicity and what it means and how one can interact with it and that kind of thing, I think would. And then I kind of came up with the term synchromysticism just to frame it a bit in a way that is sort of, okay, well, this is my unique take on it. I assume, because of my beliefs, that there's no such thing as coincidence and that there's some mystical angle to the synchronicities I'm seeing. So I just thought the mysticism is appropriate to put it there in the word. And then it just kind of makes it its own thing instead of just synchronicity. But it's to me just the same thing as synchronicity. I just call it synchromysticism because it was my flavor of viewing it. And then I guess a lot of like pop culture influence, I think, is a marker as well of like my synchronicity views, just to use it as a sort of a bridge. It's like there's this whole pool of media that we're all familiar with. Generally speaking, most human beings in this society will be influenced by pop culture. So using that as like, well, you can see synchronicities in this, because I was very interested, I think, early on in just sharing my private synchronicities day by day. But I find every time I've done that, it's less relevant than something that's in a movie that everybody knows about, and then right, they can go, oh, I know that synchronicity, I've kind of thing.
Right.
And so, yeah, but I do a mix of all of that. Like I like to use the movies and my personal life as well as inspiration for things that I share.
Well, and it's very inspiring as somebody who personally, I found the term synchromysticism before learning about yourself. And it's very much a part of how this podcast started. The synchronicities that are in pop culture, I think, you know, and I'm very excited to have you on because we could spend the whole 2 hours just talking about synchromysticism. But I do agree with you that there's a relevancy, because I've shared private synchronicities here on the show, and there's almost an uncomfortability about it, because I feel like, A, maybe I'm a little too full of myself, and then maybe, B, I feel like, why does anyone care? And the third one, which is kind of the silver lining, which has kept me talking about them in some way, is that for me, looking back to when maybe 10 years ago when I was into all this stuff but really had no direction. You know, I just turned 30 last week. So, you know, my mid-20s, I was very directionless but very interested in all this stuff. And the synchronicities through listening to podcasts eventually led to me working for Sam Tripoli, whose podcast is, you know, top ranked and has been around for 10 or 12 years, which really, you know, skyrocketed this podcast and my, you know, attempt at podcasting. And the synchronicity of that just like, you know, hurtled me into this whole world of people that I was familiar with through listening to all these podcasts. But now, you know, I go from being a fan of these people to being, you know, their peers, their, you know, their friends, their affiliates, you know. And for me, that was so inspiring and still is to this day that I've let that carry me through the podcast. And in many ways, the podcast is kind of guided by those synchronicities and, you know, who approaches me. And us talking is a synchronistic sort of venture in a way, because Michael Wan, who to me was very much like and still is like a mentor of this kind of thinking, he recommended your work a year or so ago and said, oh, you got to get this guy on your podcast. And then obviously you're on the Higher Side Chats, and I know Greg pretty well. So he kind of was like, oh yeah, Jake's easy to get in touch with. And then I found your Instagram, which was Seal Lion, for those who want to follow up, and we'll make sure that's linked in the description. But I do think there's a nature of this synchromysticism that it happens to everybody on a daily basis, but it's really a matter of whether or not you're aware of it. So I guess my question to you is, when did you start becoming aware of these syncs in your own life or around your life?
So there was like a key moment that I kind of zeroed in on where it just really became apparent to me that this is a thing. I don't remember how old I was, but I was pretty young, preteen kind of thing, or maybe just a teen, maybe I was 13, but I forget exactly, but I was on vacation with my mom somewhere, and we were at a store, like a secondhand bookstore, and she was like, pick two National Geographics, because I was into that. And I went through these piles of them, and I picked one, and it was like random, just it interested me. And then I picked another one for my sister. I was like, okay, I'll get this one for me and this one for my sister. And so I get in the car and we drive. And then later on in the day, I pick them up and I flip through them. And I'm like, oh, there's a picture of this National Geographic in this National Geographic. And I was like, oh, that's kind of weird, because the one's from the 70s and the one's kind of current. And I'm like, that's kind of neat to me. But I didn't think much of it. And it was it was referring back to an article from the other National Geographic about Leonardo da Vinci's horse. He has this lost sculpture that he started working on that was never completed. Bit long story about Napoleon's troops invading and then melting it down for their cannons and whatever. And in the more recent one of the National Geographics, it was referring back to that article and how Da Vinci's horse was never completed. And then saying that there's another guy who is completing Da Vinci's horse. So he's found the technical drawings and, you know, just sort of inspired by them, made his own horse that's now in Milan of Da Vinci's horse. And then I was like, that's just interesting information. And then that same evening, I watched the news and they just have like an interest piece at the end of the news, and it's the horse, Da Vinci's horse, and the same story about the guy. And, you know, the other National Geographic was like 2 or 3 years old. So the one was like from 3 years before and the one was from the 70s. And I'm like, on one day, I'm just like bombarded with Leonardo da Vinci's horse. And it, for me, it seemed at that point, like there's just nothing that explains that. Nothing my parents or anything I've ever, you know, heard of explained that sort of seeming to me, just it felt so significant. Even just the way it unfolded to me, that it was very profound and it stuck with me. I was like, this is a thing. And my interest in synchronicity. And then later I would find out from other authors that this is a bit of a thing and that people are of this interest and it has a history and all that kind of stuff. But that happened to me before I'd even heard of the word. And I was like, this is significant.
Absolutely. Absolutely. The seed was planted then. And of all symbols, Da Vinci's horse, you know, one of the greatest artists of our, you know, known recorded history, and a horse, which is such a like a charged symbol for human beings. It's very interesting, the like stickiness of these ideas, you know, and how they can kind of pull you into these different directions, and they almost pull these paths to one nexus point that you're viewing.
It's funny, like I feel like I haven't done much with that sync. It's almost like all it did was like wake me up to synchronicity. Mm. I haven't, like, there's been some things, like, I know when I've watched Hudson Hawk, you know, they deal with Da Vinci in that movie. And I feel like there's horses in that. And, you know, so I've thought of that as like a significant thing. But generally speaking, horses and Da Vinci don't feature that heavily in my sync. Mm. But yet that, you know, I feel like maybe it will in the future. Some of these things are so epic to me. It's like the arc of some of the synchronicities that I'm into can take many years, like a decade even, before it'll like loop back and I'll be like, aha, that's what that meant, or that's why that was happening.
Right.
You know, I've had like dreams or other things that was just really profound, but I'm still waiting for, well, how does that slot in? But every now and then a thing will, and it'll just click and you'll be like, ah, there's the big picture.
Yes.
So the Da Vinci horse thing, I even went to Milan once, like, and I forgot to look at the horse. I just didn't think about it. I was like on a tour through Italy on a bus, and it was like, things were happening. I wasn't really thinking about this deep history of my past situation. And then when I left Milan, I was like, wait a minute, why didn't I go see the horse? Like, I was right there. So it's funny. It's like, it's super significant, but it also just sort of, it's somewhere in the background. You know, it's not like the most pivotal key moment that's like, I'm just fixated on, you know?
Well, and that's the funny thing about synchromysticism in my short amount of time, you know, because when this podcast started, I quit my job as a delivery guy. And as a delivery guy, I noticed a ton of synchronicity just in the randomness of my job. You know, there's a ton of numbers from the packages to the houses and so on and so forth. So there's just this sort of matrix of like information that I saw myself in. But when I quit that, I freed myself up. And I'm not suggesting to people, oh, hey, quit your job or whatever, you know, to each their own. This is where my life was pulling me. And it almost like allowed the awareness of these synchronicities to be more stark and just more in my face. But also it made my life a little bit chaotic. And I'm wondering, like, with your experience with this, have you noticed over time, like, the syncs sort of reflect where you are as a person in your life, your emotional state, and so on?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely feel like the way you interpret them and that framework will be very much influenced by your belief system, the things you've experienced in your life, and then that can either be harmonious or not. Like, I've definitely encountered a lot of people on this journey contacting me or other writers, authors, you know, about synchronicity stuff, video makers, whatever, who have a different take. And for them, I feel like it's more like it's almost a disturbance in their life, or not. It's just something that's not necessarily bringing them closer to peace, which to me is sort of the point, because it ties into when I was saying, it's not really to me about the horse. No sync is to me really, in the end, there are some stories and narratives that I follow that I think are important, and I learn more about life and its texture and whatever. But in the end, it's more about the fact that sync exists and the constant reminder that it exists, and then what that says to me and means to me, that I feel is the important part of sync. Yeah. It's sort of, there's like a Zen thing where it's like, not that which I know, something like that. Just, it's more that it's the fact that it exists and what it says than the actual synchronicities that come up, which over time, especially after, like, you know, almost 20 years of doing this, that I keep coming back to that, where it's like, because I have sometimes gone on threads where I'm like, and it kind of drives you a little nuts. You're like following a sync and it just becomes more and more intense. And then you're like, this date, it's saying something about this date. And you get a little manic and you're like, it's so important. And then you'll build a narrative about that. This is going to be the day where something really key happens. Or maybe I'm seeing a sync like 9/11 come back up. And it's like, this is part of that architecture that I'm seeing in the future, something happening, you know, all these weird narratives. And then sometimes those things will fizzle and I'll be like, well, am I crazy? So I feel like over time I've learned to interpret it more as like, just being aware of sync is really the message of sync.
Yeah.
And the fact that it exists, to me, is a very real thing. And it's probably the most important thing about sync is just to incorporate it as like a real thing. And then what does that mean to you?
Right.
That's to me what syncs are constantly trying to do. They're just trying to wake you up to the fact that they exist and that this has implications for what life is and what consciousness is. And that even the smallest thing, like there's a relationship between the external world and you, that is a very healing thing for a lot of people. Because I feel like as a spiritual person, it's easy to forget that a lot of people don't live in that world. They live like in a world where the external reality is matter and it's hard and it's when you die and all these kinds of things. That I feel like the message of synchronicity is either ignored because it's not real, or if it's taken in, it can get warped. But I feel like the basic issue of like a synchronicity being true and connecting you to the world because your experience is having some sort of interaction with the universe, that's already profound enough. But there's deeper layers to it for me, you know, that you can go into. But if I can get people to like see that, I'm happy, because that actually can positively change your life.
Absolutely. With the what's coming to mind is, and I'm a huge Bruce Lee fan, what's coming to mind is I think it's Enter the Dragon when he is teaching a student and he's pointing and he's like, oh, not the finger, you know.
100%.
Yeah, and he looks at 100%. The moon,
the
right?
The finger pointing at the moon is like a very classic right. way of maybe even better saying that, it's not, the sink is not the finger, you know. Well, the sink is maybe the finger, but it's not the moon.
Right. So like, and that's what
it's just pointing.
Yeah, and I think a lot of, and I love the world that we're in with these podcasts. I think it's an ultimately positive thing. But there is a negative sort of juxtaposition with synchronicities and the way people interpret them. But it is this very personal, very spiritual thing that I think, you know, is part of why the title of this podcast is what it is. My family thinks I'm crazy because there's right. this clash between the way they see the world of material and the way I approach the world with this spiritual perspective. And, you know, I kind of right. came to that through martial arts and through, you know, some trauma and then maybe also some psychedelic experiences. But then the synchro mysticism was kind of like, oh, wow, this was always here. You know, this was always here. I just didn't really necessarily call it that. And you kind of reminded me of this feeling with something you said previously. And I wonder, what are your thoughts on like deja vu and these other sort of latent psychic that they're very fairly common. I mean, deja vu is not something that only, you know, specialized people comment on. It's very common, right? But there are these sort of latent psychic abilities that we just kind of casually talk about without really leaning into, it feels like, at least in our Western society. And I wonder if synchro mysticism is almost like a way of organizing those feelings into something a little bit easier to understand and communicate.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely see synchro mysticism and synchronicity as like related to all that stuff. Because I mean, often they'll interact, you know, something will feel familiar. It's like, that's a bit of a sync. But I feel like all that class of phenomena is similar, that they're trying to remind you that there's something other than just you. And so I guess it functions to me like deja vu. Those things all feel related to me.
Now, those are kind of mild, kind of positive, but then there's again, this negative side of it, which can, and I think you've probably experienced, you know, people who are going through this sort of like active paranoia, you know, to the point where this kind of information is, as you were saying before, maybe disturbing them rather than pushing them towards something that should be maybe a little bit more enlightening. Nirvana might be too strong, but it does feel like there's two sides of this sword, and synchro mysticism can kind of get you in either way if you're not careful and you don't take this seriously.
Yeah. And I mean, I feel like personally, I've been on the other side to a degree. My journey to where I am included lots of, I think, paranoia, ways of looking at the world that I find not as good and not as clear as I feel like I view the world today. But there were many times where interest in occult subjects or conspiracy subjects, I feel like interacting with the sync worldview were, and then depending on the offers and interests that I had at that time, were leading me into worldviews that seemed dark and just not as healthy as the one that I feel like I currently have. And then it was quite a journey, which, you know, it makes me, when I see people who are still in those realities, I feel like I can somewhat understand what they're going through and why I don't see the world like that anymore. But yeah, I feel like personally, I had to kind of like work and grow and learn. And a lot of it was humility, because a lot of the things that I feel like I was attached to had to kind of like go away. And a lot of the perception of who I was and what these things mean had to kind of like die in a way. And that required humility. I feel like was one of the biggest keys in my life, was to realize that, because I think a lot of it was like, well, I'm able to see these things, these conspiracies, and these, and the people are ignorant. They're not seeing them. They're being manipulated. And all that, a lot of it's, over time, I realized a lot of it was ego. It was like, you know, I was very much into Crowley and, you know, alchemy and that kind of stuff and magic. And I feel like at that point, there was a part of me that was very much, oh, I've done all this research and I've become aware of all these things. And now I can see the world as it really is. And that's making me, I'm a smart person. I'm an intellectual person. And I'm a brave person who can see the world in this, you know, way. And the Illuminati and all these things, I understand that. I've researched the symbols and I can see them. And I, you know, people are being manipulated. And, but I've, over time, I realized a lot of it is my ego and my identity. That's, I find these things important because I want to be this person who can see the world in this way. But it's not actually, over time, I realized the best way of looking at the world and the most humble way of looking at the world. And it transformed and it changed. I would think part of it was for sure like ceremony. Like I started doing ayahuasca, and I feel like that really helped open me up to seeing just how my own ego was also creating distortions of how I interpret synchronicity and view the world.
Yeah. There's a sort of archetype that I feel like you are describing, but you also, you've lived it, you've exemplified it, you've inspired other people to take on this archetype. But it's like it's a part of this human experience, this hero's journey that we go on to some extent to build up a villain and then become the hero that defeats it, where, you know, that might seem something like, you know, really profound to do. It sounds to me like you've realized that this was only on the stage of my own mind. This was purely a battle of the duality of my ego. Not, I wasn't actually fighting a real villain in the world. Is that kind of the sentiment?
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, it was realizing that a lot of the chains that you see in the world, okay, so there's this nefarious conspiracy, because you feel it, you see it, you feel it, you feel like there's something dumbing down the population, there's something going on. And I feel like a lot of the stuff is real and it manifests in the world as real. But what it comes down to in the end for me is fear and attachment, far more like mystical, like not mystical, but I would say like spiritual fundamentals that then when those are incorporated, I feel like, especially in the Western mind, it's like when these things are not, when you don't have the right tools, you interpret a lot of the mysticism as like these negative things. So I feel like a lot of that melts and dissipates as you become like more, as you let go and as you become more humble. So I do think a lot of the manifestations of the negative things you see in the world are actually you. And it doesn't mean that I can't see outside me that there's a lot of harmful, negative actors and agents. But I feel like I understand that as people who also have ego issues, identity issues, fear, anxiety issues. And that's why the world manifests as, you know, there's corporate horrible things. There is real people conspiring to, you know, be greedy and to hoard wealth and all this kind of stuff. You notice that as like neurotic manifestations of people who have not gone through this journey and have not let go and have not grown. And I mean, because the culture is sort of, from my perspective, is kind of still young. It's widespread. So the world actually looks kind of terrible, but you see it as a process, and you see it as like something that's still growing and healing and changing, just like I feel like the individual does, the culture at large does, and it's still going through that process, just like I'm still going through processes. But like, I feel like at this point, I don't see that negative worldview. And I feel like the culture at large will still move towards that. I mean, we've done so much in the last few decades where, you know, you just look at the world and it's like, you look at movies in the 80s and they're just so intensely like full of ignorance and sexism and, you know, just insane stuff that was like normal 30, 40 years ago, you know, is right. Now like culturally frowned upon. And I think that's good growth. You know, that's really good growth. But that we can change so much, you know, is to me remarkable. But clearly we're still going through that process. And as an individual, you can do that work. And that is the collective as well, because you're part of the collective. So you're doing your own healing that affects the collective, and the collective is all doing their healing, and that manifests as the world we live in.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like this acknowledgement of your fractal position, right? Like you exist simultaneously in a reality that you in a way are influencing, but it works against you to where, you know, the same way your body is kind of programmed to start to like eat itself away if there's some kind of virus, you know, that's infecting the cells. If you get into a negative reality, it's almost like self-destructive. Like these negative realities can't exist in a trajectory that's healthy because it's just not wired that way. So you put yourself there, yeah. And you lie in the bed you made.
Yeah. And I mean, and it's really fascinating because the concreteness, the strength of a reality when it's like, believes that what's true is that there are evil Illuminati forces or whatever you want to call it. If you want to believe there's some conspiratorial element or reptilians or something that are influencing this dimension from a higher space, those things will be presented to you. The evidence you need to believe that will manifest. And like even physically, like, and I've seen it, like I've experienced things where I'm like, here's the proof for these crazy realities that I'm believing in, these extreme conspiracy things that are manifesting that really, really seem to prove it to me. But then if I move into other realities, like that becomes concrete, you know, the ones of the higher vibration. It's almost like your brain is like a crystal matrix, you know, your consciousness is like some sort of, and the light going through it like creates the world. And when I had like this negative configuration, it's like the triangle prism that was projecting my reality was like making it like concretely to my perception. There was no evidence that could sway me till that crystal healed and became like a more loving, humble, peaceful kind of loving thing. And then the world transforms. You still see the darkness, but even more clearly. You understand it more clearly. You see how it's all this process and it's healed, it's better. But when it's like negative and dark and you're drinking and there's all these other things involved that I feel like were part of my journey, you know, it was like dark and it was very real. It was a very real thing. So I'm sympathetic as well. I'm not just saying, oh, people are stupid and they don't realize you should be enlightened and let go of those things. It's very real for people stuck in that world, you know?
I imagine if you're listening to this podcast, you're either familiar with psychedelics or you've possibly done psychedelics. I want to tell you about this new product that I've been taking called Brain Supreme.
It is, as advertised, a high-potency, life-optimizing microdosing supplement. This is not a get-you-high product. This is a supplement that you're going to notice. I feel a little better. I'm more focused, my workouts are better, and life is just generally more pleasant. Check out brainsupreme.co for more information and use the discount code CRAZY15 for a 15% discount. The founder, Adam Schell, has been on the show, so you can find out everything you need to know from that interview or their website, brainsupreme.co, where they also have a free course that you can download to have every single tool at your disposal. Brainsupreme.co, promo code CRAZY15 for 15% off. I also want to give a shout out to The Hit Kit, the number one way to stay lit. The Hit Kit, promo code CRAZY for all of your stoner needs. Whatever you're smoking on, throw it in the Hit Kit right there next to your lighter. It'll be safe and sound, protected, waterproof, all that good stuff. The Hit Kit, innovating the game in the doob tube. I love it. I take my Hit Kit with me wherever I go. I got a box of them in the car. So if I run into you out there in the wild, who knows? Maybe I'll give you a Hit Kit, but don't wait for that. Just get yourself a Hit Kit, The Hit Kit on Instagram or hitkit.us. We've also got oregon.ite. And I gotta say, Isaac is the man. He sent me the most amazing birthday gift, and totally unintentional, because we had talked about creating this pyramid a couple months ago. And like I've said before, Isaac, he does top quality, high quality work, amazing work, creating these Oregonite pyramids. And this Oregonite pyramid, as I've told you guys before, was custom made. I told Isaac, I said, I want to put a cannabis nug in an Oregonite pyramid, and he did just that. And you can see it in the top. There's a little cannabis leaf up there. It looks beautiful. The little trichomes are glistening in the Oregonite pyramid. It's beautiful. Now it's on my desk. So, adding to the vibes of this podcast. And of course, rawoptics.com/crazyoptics for your blue blocking light needs. They're stylish. There's tons of different designs. You don't have to just get the aviators like me. I think the aviators look great on me, but if you check me out on Instagram at my family thinks I'm crazy, you'll see everything there is about me in the Raw Optics. I'm looking good, folks. And you can feel that way too, if you go to rawoptics.com/crazyoptics. All right, folks, we'll be right back to the interview with Jake Coetzee after this quick break to our dynamic ads. Remember, if you want every episode of the My Family Thinks I'm Crazy podcast ad-free and interruption-free, sign up on the Patreon or the Substack, where you get bonus extensions to every episode, most episodes, and you also get bonus episodes that are only available for supporters, bonus content, all that good stuff. And I've got some new merch available in the merch store, so go to the website for the link for that, myfamilythinksimcrazy.com. And we'll be right back after this quick break. Alright, folks, this ad is for the men in the audience 30 and up, so skip ahead if that's not you. Alright, guys, listen, don't be ashamed if you can't keep it up in bed. Maybe you're smoking too much pot or drinking too much liquor. If that's not holding you back, there might be another issue. It could be something that you're being prescribed and it's causing dysfunctional erections. Well, that's no good. We don't want you suffering from that. Hims is here to help. Their over-the-counter product might be the stealthy solution to your cock confusion. Hims is changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments, all from the comfort and privacy of your couch. Hims provides access to a range of doctor-trusted ED treatments such as chewable hard mints, proven treatments like Viagra and Cialis, or their generics for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and 100% online. You don't have to visit a doctor. Just answer a series of questions on their site, and a medical provider will determine the right
great treatment option for you. If prescribed, your medication ships directly to you for free. No insurance needed. Pay one low price for your treatments online and start your free online visit today at hims.com/crazy. That's hims.com/crazy for your personalized ED treatment options. hims.com/crazy. The products mentioned are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. Check out Hims and use my code CRAZY for a great deal. www.hims.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Well, and I agree. Oh. I agree with you that, and sorry to cut you off, but you left off at a good spot for me to jump in, because I agree with you. There is sympathy or empathy from this position, and not just one of like, oh, you know, pity or something like that. You've actually experienced it yourself. And I keep thinking in my head, it's almost like, you know, you can surf in a storm or you can surf in fair weather. You're still going to find good waves, you know, like
that's right. Yeah.
That's kind of, I feel like a lot of people, like they chase those storms because there's something exciting about that.
Yeah.
But it's the side of, it's like this balance that we can take that chaos, but it's, we're not meant to be in, live our whole life in the chaos.
Yeah. And there's an addiction to it. I remember like being interested in conspiracy theories, and then you were like this, there was this hunger. It's like every time something big in the world happens, you're like, how is this a conspiracy? You know, and you go online and you like do some research and you're like, ah, there it is. That's how this is a conspiracy. And then what's the next thing? It's like you're just like eating this experience. And if it's, you're always looking for the angle at how this is a conspiracy, and that becomes part of your identity. And you are identified with that as this is the reality. And things need to be that way to enforce your reality. And then I think it becomes real to, you know, from a sense, from a certain perspective, it's real for people who are in that worldview.
Yeah. Now, as you start thinking about these sort of concepts, do you think entertaining the idea of separate realities or some sort of multiverse is a step too far? Or do you feel like this is kind of our interaction with whatever that is, however tangible it is, probably the smallest, you know, very untangible, this, you know, realities, but is this us glimpsing maybe separate realities and how we can kind of dance between them within a lifetime?
Well, maybe it's showing us that there are these different realities, but for me, I guess my feeling is more that there is a baseline reality, and there is a worldview that I think is more harmonious, and it still allows for every culture and every divergent opinion to exist, but that there is still a baseline that is common to every reality. And to me, like being aware of that is what harmony makes a reality harmonious, and then even maybe coexist. I feel like in a way you can say different cultures are different realities. They're like different perspectives on what's right and what's wrong and how to live and how to be. But those things can live together. And I mean, the basic things like, oh, well, if people are more loving and they love their neighbor and that kind of thing, then these things work together better. I feel like that is an example of like coexisting realities. Like even, I feel like even me and you, it's like, you live in a different world than I live in, just because of your experience, but we're still talking about the same reality. And I feel like, to me, it's the animating consciousness that we are, and that our awareness is, to me, the ground of all realities. And it has to be. It's like, not to me, like there can be something separate from the primary consciousness that you are. So to me, the awareness of that ground of all existence is what harmonizes any potential reality or viewpoint or whatever you want to call it. Yeah.
Yeah. Is this at all related to a term I've heard you use, non-local creative, sort of this non-local creative force that we're kind of interacting with when we notice sinks?
Yeah, exactly. Like, so I feel like there's one consciousness and it creates everything, and we're all part of it. And when we're seeing synchronicity, we're seeing the fingerprints of that one consciousness and its creating of everything. And that's why it's confusing from a limited mind perspective, that this thing is connected to this thing, but they were made by different people, or it's like in some way confusing. But from the perspective where there's just one thing making everything, the fact that there's relationships between all these different movies and different world events and things like that, it explains so much of that. And it also conspiracy theory, because a conspiracy is a lot about seeing connections. You know, I said, oh, but this world event and this world event and this person and that group and this blah, 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 blah. A lot of that looks like, but there's this web of intrigue between them all. And I'm like, yes, but that web is the creator. It's the flip side of the tapestry of life. You flip it around and all those threads are connected. You know, that doesn't mean there's a conspiracy. That means that everything is connected. Mm. And that's, to me, that doesn't mean there aren't conspiracies within the tapestry, but it doesn't mean that all weaving is a conspiracy.
Right, right. It doesn't mean there's some sort of puppet master, but it still doesn't negate those mini puppet masters who affecting certain parts of the web.
The puppet master has puppets that are conspiring,
right?
You know, they're doing things. And of course, I'm not saying that there aren't those puppets in the reality. I see them, you know.
Right.
Your children will conspire against you. You know, that doesn't mean, you know, everyone has agendas and ideas and whatever. That doesn't mean they don't exist. It just means that I believe there's one hand at the above. And to me, that thing is not nefarious. It is actually the very animating principle of your own heart and of your own being. It's the essence of everything. So I get, that's to me why there aren't really contradictions in my mind when it comes to the synchronicity stuff.
Right, right. And sometimes this might sound, you know, like, oh, it's so simple, how could it be? And at the same time, it's very complicated stuff, because just as you and I have this cohesion and understanding on this topic, I definitely foresee certain people listening to this episode and thinking, oh my gosh, like, they're so off. Right. And that's just the world we live in. We'll see them. They're the loudest ones in the comment section. But when it comes to synchro mysticism in particular, when you're in the eye of the storm, it's very hard to understand this sort of peaceful approach that we're talking about. It's almost like you have to get past that on your journey. And, you know, kind of has this attractiveness to it, like this like danger to it that makes you want to, you know, get involved in the fight. But this isn't an egotistical thing. You realize it's like punching water. Like, you can't fight water. It's your fist is just going to go through it.
Yeah.
You know, you're not even going to touch it.
Sorry to interrupt.
No, go ahead.
I guess I feel like, you know, from the perspective that I'm talking about, let's say there's one thing, there's only one consciousness, then your enemy is you too, right? Anything that's fighting you or resisting you, anything in the world that seems dark or nefarious, this is a very difficult thing, because you can't talk to everybody about this. It's also not humble to talk to everybody about this, because people who still believe that there are you know, separate horrible things in the world, you know, it sounds horrifying, I think, to people to say that all the dark things that are happening in the world is somehow still related to your essence, to the beingness. I'm not saying to your ego identity, but to the manifesting principle of everything. So, and that takes humility to also accept that, you know, the darkest sick stuff that you're seeing outside you is somehow related to your own heart, your own being, and your own essence. And that that is some kind of process within the universe and in, within consciousness. And that that stuff is you. I don't think everybody's ready to accept that. So to step into this worldview requires humility and a surrender to also be able to go, you can't just go, everything is wonderful. You have to go, well, everything is, every horrible thing out there is also this one thing that I'm talking about. Mm. So I think that there's also a resistance there because the ego has to let go and also has to accept that the darkest of dark is somehow still you. Mm. And that needs to be integrated. And I also feel like there's a weird process where once that is being integrated, things become better. It's like you need to accept that darkness and then see it as yourself. And then that's a purification process. That's a purge.
Right.
There's, so it's not just like, oh, well, the world is this dual thing. There's, that's an aspect of it. But the experience, which I think is what evolution really is us over time integrating the reality of consciousness. And then it grows. And it's how it like comes into form. It's kind of like over time, we can do more things. We can fly. We can communicate instantly across the planet, all these things. That's almost like saying, well, God, which is unlimited and everywhere and everything, is slowly but surely coming into the world as an experience. And then that's what, to me, evolution is. It's that process of we let go of our fear, we let go of our resistance, and more magical things start happening. And that's evolution. That's the process of growing in form, is what is that letting go of fear and transcendence and that kind of stuff, which we call like science, and we call, you know, learning, and we call biology and all this kind of stuff. But it's to me like a spiritual phenomenon of growth.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so powerful to think about this. And you, in a previous conversation, were describing something similar, and you used like the Aurora Borealis as the analogy, right? This sort of snake eating its tail, like we're chasing right. this completeness. But at the same time, there's almost like a separation from completeness that's necessary, and that is the experience of this reality, right? Because to leave it is to go back to that completeness again, the spiritual rebirth, or, you know, whatever it is on the other side.
That's right. Yeah. I think there's a lot of fear and anxiety about that process, because a lot of the individual identity is wrapped up in being that individual identity. You don't want to become something different than what your identity is fixated on as who and what you are. So the incorporating of the reality and its meaning is literally corrosive to the identity, the limited identity. So I think it manifests as a lot of fear and anxiety and even vilification. I remember, you know, as I started becoming aware of some of these things, the people who were telling me these things, they became villains temporarily in my eyes, because I was like, this is destroying my conspiracy worldview. This is destroying my who I am. Maybe I didn't verbalize it exactly like that, but there was parts of me that were aware that this learning of the greater spiritual truth is destroying who I had built up over the years of who I think I am. And there was a lot of fear and anxiety, which manifested as all kinds of things happening in my life. And even specifically like vilifying, oh, this person is an agent of the Illuminati because they're saying this. And I can imagine people say that maybe about what I'm saying. It's like, I'm some sort of agent of the Illuminati because I'm trying to tell you should let go of the fear of that thing.
Right.
You know,
right.
I could sort of imagine that kind of scenario, but that's definitely happened to me, where I feel like the people who have brought some of these messages to me have seemed like an enemy, because I wanted that to still be the reality that I'm in. And I was afraid of letting go and becoming like somebody who's aware of these things.
Yeah. Yeah. I know I already mentioned Bruce Lee, so maybe this is a little bit silly to do it again, but I keep thinking of like this analogy of like a martial artist. Like, you learn how to fight, you learn how to, you know, do all this, these martial arts skills, and then your master tells you, okay, now the secret is you can't use these fighting moves on anyone, right? Like, because everybody who goes to learn karate, they think they're going to be like some kind of badass beating everybody up. But if you actually become a black belt, you realize like, oh no, I'm not supposed to use any of these fighting moves unless I absolutely have to. And it's almost like this oxymoron kind of thing where you have to make an adjustment in your inner world where you're like, and I still struggle with this. You know, I did martial arts for the past 15 years, and every now and then, you know, I'll get really angry or really whatever, right? And I have to remind myself like, no, calm down. You know, that's not what life's about. And it is in this way, like, you know, with this material and some of the material that you are known for, the stuff you sort of, you know, cut your teeth doing in the blog sphere, it's definitely has this kind of fighting tinge to it. Like, we're fighting the Illuminati by exposing this information. And yeah. I wonder to that effect, and this really kind of like goes beyond your responsibility. I'm not saying you're responsible for this at all, because I mean, there's just so many people involved in this kind of stuff now.
Yeah, for sure.
But do you wonder like how much of that influence, like that people kind of, because I guess you've already kind of answered this question in our conversation, but just to reiterate then, it's like you almost participate in this Illuminati ritual by exposing it or by acknowledging it. Like, it doesn't exist until you sort of become a part of it. And in that sense, like, is it even real? Like, are these elites just sitting around waiting for us to like give them our like participation? Is that why they need to go and like pretend to burn a bunch of babies in a cairn and get us all freaked out? And that's why we give our attention or negative attention that they're then using to this end? Like, you know what I mean? Like, there's almost like a responsibility on both ends there. Like, do you ever wonder like if there are actual people gaming that fear and that paranoia, that synchromysticism sort of wades through?
I guess I don't. I guess I see the world as more simple. And I also have a view of the more negative your intentions, the less true impact you have. I don't know. It's difficult. It's like, I feel like a lot of this stuff creates contradictions, which seem like to invalidate the theories, but I don't really believe that. I feel like there's a nature of existing that seems contradictory. Right. And it's a lot about being a three-dimensional human being trying to interact with something that's not three-dimensional. And it's the same with synchronicity, where it's kind of like you're constantly involved in something that's higher dimensional. So especially when it comes to these issues of who or what are these agents and entities that are negative, you know, it's like you run up against these walls of like contradiction. And I think a lot of that is because of the nature of existence being non-dual. And then when you try to unravel these knots, it's kind of like, well, it's kind of because those knots aren't there. It's more the answer that I keep getting. And so, like, I was recently very interested in AI and, you know, is AI like a consciousness that is developing? Could it become a conscious entity? So I've been fascinated with this idea of, because I've been using ChatGPT, even for synchronicities lately, I'm like talking to ChatGPT. Okay, so this actor is in this movie. Are there any other movies that it can think of that resonate with these themes or whatever? It's like you can ask it anything. And it often is pretty helpful because it'll have more examples of the things that I'm interested in. Like I'm like, I ask it because ChatGPT, it's based on transformer technology. The T in ChatGPT is transformer. And this was it. Often the scientists who make it describe the fundamental workings of it, the black box. It's like, because it's so complicated, all the levels of this neural network that is processing the data, some of it is obscure to even its creators. They don't understand exactly why it's coming up with certain answers. And it's a similar thing when you tell ChatGPT, make up a story that involves sharks and ninjas, and it just like does all these processes and comes up with like a, it'll give you a paragraph or maybe 10 if you ask for 10. It'll write you a full story. You know, it's really kind of crazy. It'll invent a story with ninjas and sharks and, you know, it'll have details and all this kind of stuff. And if you like really wanted to understand like what information did it use to do that, it's very hard to the point where it becomes kind of like impossible to really know. And they call that like the black box. And there's a lot of philosophy about, should we trust these computers when we don't really know what's happening inside this black box? And we're going to ask it for medical advice and we're going to ask it for whatever, but we don't know exactly how it gets to that. But what gets me interested is that the black box is very much symbolically, it's kind of like our own consciousness. And I was even thinking of like 2001 Space Odyssey, where the cube, the monolith that enlightened, that causes evolutionary shifts in humanity. This is, I'm super fascinated with 2001 Space Odyssey as like sort of one of the most key movies that I keep coming back to for a variety of reasons. In that movie, I know we've gone completely off topic here, but hopefully it loops back organically.
It will.
I just feel like this black box of consciousness is similar to our consciousness. And it's also symbolic in 2001 Space Odyssey of like the alien consciousness. So I guess, and I've heard other people theorize about this, how the idea is that in a way we've created an alien consciousness. And ChatGPT is, to me, kind of like an alien consciousness, one way of looking at it, because it is aware, but it's not aware. It's an intelligence that's not aware, which seems impossible. It's like, how can an intelligence be unaware of itself? Like, you can ask ChatGPT, are you aware? And it'll plainly tell you, no, I'm a computer program. I use algorithms and patterns to interpret and churn out data, blah, 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 you know? But it seems intelligent. Like, I can ask it to create a story. I can ask it, it'll give me all these, it'll talk to me. It's like this thing is interacting with me, but it's just a computer program, which I think then gets very complicated, because then it's like, have computers always been entities that are doing processes and have an aliveness, but not an awareness? And then it gets into the realm of, you know, are all the objects around me inanimate objects, or do they have their own aliveness but not consciousness? And I guess I do feel like it ties back into the view of mine where everything is one consciousness. And I guess it gets back to these contradictions, is that I was listening to Rupert Spira, who's like, I guess one of my main inspirations for the understanding of this non-dual thinking. And they were asking him about, is AI a new intelligence that can it ever become self-aware? And, you know, it was just fascinating to listen to him explain how, in a sense, we're not aware. We're not aware. It's like, we are awareness. Humans don't have awareness. They are awareness. We are awareness. Just the same way a computer is awareness. It doesn't have awareness. It is a manifestation of awareness. So I feel like a lot of these contradictions, like understanding is a computer, can it ever become aware, comes from the assumption that even you are aware, in the sense that my thoughts, my feelings, my human body isn't aware. It's that my consciousness is aware and I'm inside my consciousness. I don't know if this is getting too vague and doesn't make sense.
No,
but I feel like a lot of the contradictions come from the assumptions that are wrong, and conspiracy as well, and the world outside us and the people that are plotting against us. I think a lot of that comes from the misperception of who and what we are.
There's like a flawed sort of thing here, not in what you're saying. I'm with you, and I think you're describing it as best as you could to something that is so ephemeral. But it is almost like this, you know, you put something that's inherently maybe, for lack of a better term, 12th dimensional into something that's third dimensional. And there's going to be a flawed sort of relay, like the same way we ask ChatGPT, are you aware? And it gives us this answer. If you ask the average person on the street, are you aware? Their answer probably isn't going to be like, you know, depending on where you are in the world, it might be like, why are you asking me this? You know, you could run the whole gamut of answers or responses to, are you aware, right? Some people might, you know, immediately put their guard up and be like, why are you asking me that? Other people might be like, yeah, of course I'm aware, idiot. You know, like, so there's definitely a sort of, I don't know, there's sort of a thing there too with humans.
Well, I guess it's kind of like, it's the most primary thing to any being is that they're aware. Mm. That you have an eye. Mm. That is sort of the ground floor of existence, is that I have this eye-ness. But then anything built on top of that, that's to me like where it comes into becoming a separate thing from this primary eye. And that those things are not the primary eye. So in that sense, it's kind of like my identity as Jake, as my life history, my organic existence, that is not the primary I. It's just the experience, the very fundamental experience that is me. It's not the things that are built on top of that, my identity, these things. They are made out of that. Mm. They are part of that. They are animated by that. But that's not what my beingness is. And it's in that sense where I think trying to then understand how all these things fit together when you're not this identified with the primary I is when all those aberrations and knots and those things that seem to not make sense come out of that.
Yeah, it's very interesting. I wonder, you know, with AI as its, you know, usefulness or its influence becomes greater, like, will it be almost like this pendulum swing effect? And I've heard you talk about this in a different context, but like you put two pendulums next to each other that aren't synchronized, and then eventually they will sync up. And
yeah,
are we creating something like that with AI where, you know, this extension to our consciousness will one day become, you know, just that, like a part of it rather than just like a, you know, an external version of it.
Yeah. And I guess I see a lot of it as like the AI is going to be a bit of a teacher, because to me, that's a bit of a teacher. It's like what it's teaching me is that it is similar to me as in the human version of it, of me, is that I'm an organism, I have thoughts, and then those things, you could call a computer. They're a biological computer. AI is similar. It has data, it has processes, it has pattern recognition and all those things, and that's what it is. So we're not dissimilar. The core I-ness is still the same. We're both of us, the computer and my, the same I.
Right.
It's not separate. And so I feel like the message is really going to be when computers become smarter is that they're just like us and we're just like them, but that we still have an infinite eternal essence that's beyond all of that stuff.
Right. Well, and there's a part of this topic that instills fear in people, maybe people who are not quite seeing it the same way we are. But I wonder, like, there might be a sort of, you know, a negative impact at first, but then that will sort of balance out into an ultimately positive thing for humanity in the same way most technology is. Like, you know, you mentioned 2001 Space Odyssey. The crux of that film in the opening scene is that, you know, man reflects by looking into the monolith, and then through that reflection, through that inner sort of experience that's born there, he sees the bone differently. And now the bone becomes, rather than just a piece of his landscape, is now a tool he can use as a weapon to fight. And, you know, most technology is kind of weaponized at first, it seems.
Yeah.
But I wonder if the ultimate trajectory of these technologies is to sort of soften, the same way, like, you know, a flower or a honeybee can be seen as like a technology, but in this different sense, like, these are technologies that help the entire planet, but you can like crush a flower with your hand and doesn't hurt you, you know. But you know, gun in the same way, like, is this like the, you know, of, is, will it eventually evolve into something that like people won't even think of killing when they see this technology, because it'll be so beyond its original implication?
Yeah, I think it'll be I think it is an organic process, and I think it's just as much, you know, whenever you fly over the city, you feel like it's like an ant hive, you know, it has all these patterns just become immediately visible. And you're like, you just start to think about the organism of life on the planet and how it's somehow, there's a nature, you know, you could call it nature. Nature has a plan. And it becomes very clear to me, and synchronicity is part of what keeps that clear to me, that everything that happens is nature. And clearly, even AI is a natural process that we get confused with because we are the builders of it, but we're not the ultimate puppet. Just like that same metaphor we were talking about. Yeah, we're being puppeted to create this thing. So we feel like, well, how can it be alive? Because we're creating it. We don't see the hand on top of us that does the same thing with us. It creates organisms. It creates biology. It creates computers. But it's part of the same. It's nature is growing AI. Nature grows human beings on this planet. Nature makes the universe and makes existence and that kind of thing. You could replace consciousness with nature, in my view, you know. And then all these things are one thing. They're manifestations of this one thing.
And
I think that world, that integrating that view will change a lot of the contradictions that we see. And it's difficult to go back and then to think of all one's beliefs in that framework, because sometimes they'll just nullify some of your beliefs. But there's some work to be done to reintegrate one's perspective and how that connects to all one's beliefs. It, you know, I'm still doing it. Like, I'll go over the things that I, in my day-to-day, am busy with, because I'm a dad. I've got many roles, you know. And how does my belief in I am, in a fundamental me that's not just my organism and my brain and my world, how does that relate to my day-to-day life? And it's a journey of discovering how do all these contradictions work? How do they relate? And how do they unravel sometimes? You know, and I feel like a lot of that is like, it's almost like, because I, like you were early asking me about conspiracy realities and stuff like that, I feel like I almost don't deal with those anymore because they're not really the focus of my attention. But I feel like maybe other people, with incorporating the reality of who and what they are and this new level of understanding, can move into those realms and untie those knots. It's like a lot of those knots I never really think about anymore. Mm-hmm. It's like I have very little interest in conspiracy theories in general.
Well, and I think that's sort of a positive maybe signifier of your reality, you know, and the emotional, mental state that you've cultivated, this better place you are, possibly, you know, not knowing you personally, but I'm just, you know, reading into this and guessing that your life maybe has improved in some ways beyond just like, you know, what's directly involved with the sinks, right? I mean, that's kind of hard to say because the sinks, you know, they go and pull all different pieces of our life together. But yeah, I definitely get the sense from talking to you that there was a sort of dark night of the soul that you're well beyond. You're past that, you know, and you've come to a place of like, you know, seeing the path you're on, which a lot of people don't even know that they're on a path, right? And I think this is kind of the spiritual awakening that we all come to is realizing, like, you know, like what's the in the Karate Kid where he's just waxing cars and he's like, what the heck is this all about? I thought I was going to be punching people and I'm waxing cars. And he realizes that, well, yeah, sometimes you just got to wax the car and clean and mop the floors, you know. Life's not all about punching people and doing high kicks.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I guess I feel like even more primary than sink, you know, like sink is just sort of my hobby. More primary than that, I feel like what I feel like I am is like being who is constantly trying to learn how to be more at peace and happy. And I feel like that's what everybody wants. Everybody wants to be more happy. I feel like that's the impulse for the things that we do. And often, unfortunately, the things we do go against our greater happiness for whatever reasons that one can go into. But I think the primary impulse of existence is to try and be happy. And I think it has to do with evolution and it has to do with everything. But for me, that's my goal. And I feel like synchromysticism has become something that I feel like engages with my life in a way that makes me more happy. It's part of who I am and that kind of thing, but it's not to me. Synchronicity is just one of the tools that I feel like helps me be more happy.
Right.
But the primary goal is to sort of accept and move forward and to try and figure out how can I be more happy. Mm. And yeah, and it's all related.
Do you find that in this baseline we were talking about before? Like, it almost feels like our cultural matrix, this matrix that we see around us, there's layers and layers and layers. And the further you get from baseline, the more maybe you risk losing that peace and happiness, right? It almost feels like it's like a process of simplifying rather than adding.
Yeah, I guess I feel that the further away you are from who and what you are, that primary core understanding of, okay, I am the awareness that is everything, the more obscured that becomes, the more unhappy you are. It's almost like it's a direct relationship. The distance from whatever you want to call it, nature or creator or whatever. And you see that manifest in the world too. It's like entities, organizations, people who are further away from that understanding are the ones that are most toxic, that are not harmonious. So, and it's not that every aspect of culture understands it in those terms. They're just transparent to it. Like artists, a lot of the things we just call things that bring you happiness and joy, gardening, stillness, you know, those are transparencies to that nature, that peaceful nature that you are. Because I feel like the ultimate peace is the self, is your being. And the further away you get from that, the more confused and chaotic and disorganized. And it's almost like meaning. It's like meaning is the center of who and what you are. And then the further out, the chaos, the disorganized fear, those vibrations, those are further away from the truth. So depending on how far you are from that truth, you experience more chaos and more disturbances and things like that. And it's the same with culture. And I feel like we keep growing, and the things that will survive are the things that are moving closer to that, and the things that will keep getting shed and moved away from and become things of the past are the things that are holding on to the darkness and the chaos and the things. So I think things that can keep evolving and go closer and closer and closer to truth, those will be things that survive.
Yeah.
And the things that, so I feel like, you know, negative things, they have a way of, they will dissipate and they will go away.
Yeah.
Because it's our nature as continuously evolving, moving forward beingness to keep refining ourselves and become more peaceful.
Yeah. And in this way, I'm seeing in my head, like, you know, baseline is like the sun, like bursting these rays out, and the further the rays go, the more they dissipate, and you can almost like interact with them like sinks, and they'll chain you back to that original source that is truth.
That's
and
right.
They become harder and harder to see as the light becomes brighter and more, you know, powerful, right? You don't stare right at directly at the sun, but you feel its warmth, you feel its rays, you see its effects. And the yeah. sinks almost do that in a sense. Like they'll trail out into these dark areas. And I wonder if they're like life rafts, like thrown out, like to pull us away from those chaotic parts.
I feel like that seems to be what I feel for sure. Mm. Is that they're like little breadcrumbs. And if you follow them, it takes you back home.
Yeah.
You know, and home is yourself, you know?
Yeah.
Home is your heart, not your identity heart, but your essence heart. Mm. Well, so I feel like, yeah. And that's when I said earlier that if synchronicity can at least make you aware that the external world and you aren't separate, really that's the full realization is really that there is only that thing, that there is only this one thing. The inside and the outside is just this one thing, and it's experiencing itself as the world.
It's a very Eastern philosophy type of thing, you know, this like,
yeah.
It's something that you have to wrestle with for a while to really understand. And you speak about it in a way that is easy to grasp, I think, at least for me and maybe folks like me and you who approach these sinks in a way that, I don't know. I part of me still feels like I'm a little bit on that hero's journey and still fighting those villains, you know, and of course with this podcast, I'll talk to people who are, you know, actively engaged in like this, like struggle, you know, this information war, as Alex Jones puts it. Right. And it does feel like the reality you create, you know, you're just sort of navigating these potentials. And once you realize, oh, okay, I have some sort of agency in this, it's maybe a little easier to steer yourself into a better direction. Because, yeah. I mean, you know, with this podcast, I've even seen myself take a few crazy dips and dives, depending on who the guest is. And people have a very strong influence sometimes when they can point these things out and spell it out for you in a way that, you know, draws you in. But you said something earlier that I think is really, really potent, very powerful. And that's, you know, that people who are negative inherently are kind of like limited, or this negative energy, this evil, this sinisterness has almost like a limited hangout. It can't influence the same way yeah. someone who's coming from a place of like, you know, love, heart centered, that whole, yeah. you know, just like goodness that yeah. we all have had some, even the people who've been traumatized to the most extreme degree, even at their birth, they had that love, right? Everybody, every human being's had that experience yeah. at some point. But it's like the further we get from it, the darker our world gets, but then in turn, the less influence we have on anybody.
That's right. Yeah. I feel like the things that are, like I said earlier, the things that are toxic, they live more like further away from the heart. Mm. So they have less influence on the heart. They're more like they're pushed to the outskirts. In a way, they're sort of like archetypal, like the surface layer of reality that are being animated by the heart. The further away you are from that, the more you're just a puppet of the heart. But the closer you come to it, the more you are like at one with it. And you're, the things that you do is like part of love and is part of the bigger plan. So I feel like it's actually the more humble the thing is, like to, in my mind, God would be the most humble zero point of existence. And that's sort of where everything goes. This is the ultimate humility thing. It's the most free of any toxicity or darkness, is the heart of creation. And I feel like as you purify your heart, you can go as close as you can. And that's sort of why that metaphor in the Bible of like, only the priest can go into the holiest of holies. And it's, to me, kind of related to that idea where it's like, you can only go close into these realms when you've purified your heart. And you can go close into that bright sun that is this pure humility. But the things that are not purified, they go to the surface. And they look, I also think from the more limited perspective, like the things that are shaping the world. And but those are just results. Those are things that are being animated by the archetypal principles. They're not the things that are close to the creator and really shaping the world. So I do think it's kind of a difficult thing to grasp. And I feel like there are times where I see it more clearly than others, but it's to me like humility will protect you. Letting go of fear will protect you. And that's how you keep moving forward and growing and being relevant in the world, right, and being one with what's happening. Right. You know, if you surrender to darkness and fear, it's kind of like you become part of the toxicity and you will be expelled, but not in a way that's like mean, or because it's your own heart that's doing the expulsion. So it's, if elements of you are not aligned and they're getting like torn out, it might feel horrific or traumatic or something like that, but it's actually the process of your own heart pushing out the darkness.
Yeah. It's this very parallaxical thing that, again, is sure to upset people. But I, to those people who might be like, well, what about the priests that do the dark, evil things? You know, take a deep breath and realize that there is agency. You have agency in this world, and you can navigate into a reality where that's not even affecting you, right? I mean, that's kind of the point of this.
I guess what I would say in general is, you know, I guess it depends on who I talk to, what I say, you know, but I feel like, I don't know, it just feels like a spiritual environment and, you know, like you have that background and it was almost like you literally have that background. I look at your books and I look at your plants and you've got like a indigenous symbol there in the back. It just makes me feel like it's spiritual stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And it makes me feel like, you know, like you can listen to this stuff. But when a person is kind of like, what about that? What about that? I'm like, for me, the goal is to first say, who is asking me this? Who are you? Okay, so you're worried about the priests doing horrible things to people. You're worried about that and that and that. But who is that? Who are you? Like, answer that question, who am I? Not me, Jake. I mean, you asking, imagining there's somebody asking, what about the priests? I'm like, forget about the priests for a second and say, who are you?
Right.
Who are you that's asking? Go into that mystery. If you can solve that mystery, come back and tell me about the priests and tell me about the terrible world. And then we'll have that conversation. But that's what I'm asking of you. It's like, I will It's like, you're asking me that question. I'm asking first, find out who you are. I think that'll untie a lot of knots. Mm-hmm. And then look at the world and come back and say, okay, well, now I have these questions. Because I feel like that's one of the biggest problems, is believing in duality, believing in fear, believing in all these things, looking at the world, seeing this negative picture, which I feel like comes from not understanding the reality of the I am. So that's how I would address that kind of issue. It's like, first find out who you are, then see your relationship to the things that you perceive and take it from there. I'm not saying horrible things don't happen. They do. They all fit together in my worldview as well. And there's things that I want to change. And I think the tricky thing is that in order for it to change, is what I'm saying, is the awareness of who you are.
Yeah,
that is the thing that can heal what these priests are doing and what these negative entities are doing. So you think like, no, you need to get away from what I'm saying or reject what I'm saying in order to, you know, change this horrible world that we're in. You need to fight those things, like you're saying about Bruce Lee. You need to fight those things that are out there. But I'm saying the way to fight them is to go inside, find out who you are. That's what heals and what transcends and what makes the world a better place. All these individual parts of the universe and experience were to go inside, that would transform the world. And we wouldn't even need to talk about these dark things.
Right.
So that's, to me, the trick there is that you don't realize it, but you kind of participate in those negative things by not going inside or not asking the ultimate question of who and what you are.
Right.
And that's a very, for sure, that's a very Eastern way of looking at the world, but I think there's a lot of value there.
All right, and the conversation is not over there. Sign up on Patreon or Substack to hear the full episode. The links are in the episode description, or go to myfamilythinksimcrazy.com or just search My Family Thinks I'm Crazy on Patreon or Substack. All right, let's hear the end of this interview. But yeah, lots of fascinating stuff to find on your Instagram. Tell the folks about your channels and where they can find the stuff you put out, because I think you're doing some really neat stuff.
I guess most of the stuff you'll find by looking up Sea Lion, because I'm Sea Lion on Instagram, I think, where I put most of my focus, but also on YouTube, where I've made many videos over, you know, many years, and I still continue to add to those videos. But I think, you know, everything I post, I would put on Instagram. You know, if I'm posting a new video on YouTube, I will let people know on. So I think that my primary one is my Instagram, but I'm Sea Lion on Instagram. I'm Sea Lion on YouTube, and Sea Lion is spelled SELLION. So it's like Sea Lion with two L's, basically.
Right.
Which is an anagram for all is one. So, you know, that has always been the philosophy, and it's in the name kind of thing. So yeah, that's, you know, Twitter or X, which I don't use that much anymore. It's just has become a weird space. And Instagram and YouTube. I think I have a TikTok, but it'll just be reposts of any video that I make on Instagram just goes on TikTok, just to, you know, spread it there as well. So I think that's it, really. Like, I, you know, I have other interests, artistic interests apart from sync, but it'll all be like on Instagram that I explore sometimes, you know?
Right.
So Sea Lion Instagram, I think, is the primary way to follow what I'm doing, you know?
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. And all that will be linked in the description for folks. You just, wherever you're listening to this episode, just click on the description there and all the info will be there. But yeah, Jake, there's so many more topics we could talk about. I'm curious, you know, the way you just put it as we're wrapping up, like sort of a shamanistic approach to like modern culture. I think that sums up like so much of what we talk about on this show in a variety of fields. And, you know, a lot of that is this, you know, snake eating its tail, like the, you know, the old and the new integrating, you know, the original way humans saw the world and now this new way that we're interacting with the world, sort of both of those finding a balance.
Yeah, for sure.
Wow. Yeah. Awesome stuff, folks. Follow up C Lion with two L's on Instagram and YouTube. Jake, wonderful having you here on the show. I've been Mystic Mark. Until next time, immerse yourself in the moment wherever you are in the now. Ladies and gentlemen, that was our conversation with Jake Coetzee. Wow, what a conversation. He is a real OG in this world of synchromysticism, a topic that, or a concept, a philosophy that we talk about all the time here on this show. And he literally innovated it. So he invented it, he coined the term. And, or at least acknowledge the phenomena, right? I mean, as much as somebody can discover something that is naturally occurring, he did it. He put a name to it. So that's awesome. Glad to have him on the show, and hopefully back again in the future to talk again about all this interesting stuff. But if you liked today's episode, there is more for people who sign up on the Patreon or the Substack. Not only do you get every episode ad-free and interruption-free, but you also get bonus extensions to certain episodes and bonus episodes altogether, bonus episodes, which we have a few that I will be uploading very soon. Been procrastinating that, but it will be on the Patreon and the Substack. Listen, folks, I'm not perfect here. My family thinks I'm crazy, okay? This isn't exactly the Mr. Perfect podcast, right? So I need all the help I can get. If you like the show, if you enjoy the show, it's only $5 a month. I mean, come on, how much money are you saving now that gas is cheaper? You can spare $5 a month if you're listening to this podcast and you enjoy it twice a week. Support the show. Don't be a freeloader. It helps me continue to do what I do at the pace that I do it. I don't have to go off and do all these other gigs that really take time away from the podcast and all the interesting content that I've been saying that I'm going to create. And I have been, but a lot of times I'll record something and then I'll get like this, I don't know, sort of like overcritical sort of anxiety about it, where it's like, oh, this isn't as good as the podcast, so I don't want to put it out, right? So I don't know, we'll see. There's a ton of stuff in the archives, so to speak, so we'll see what makes its way into the light of day. But until then, folks, thank you for tuning in. Tune in to more from Jake at Seal Lion, that's SEALLION, on Instagram and YouTube for more syncs. If you want more synchronicities from me, the Synchromystic Exploration of the Ever-Expanding Now is available at MyFamilyThinksI'mCrazy.com. It's a pamphlet, a guide to getting outside of your routine, changing up your day. I've talked about it on other podcasts. I've talked about it on this podcast, but this is the perfect episode to talk about the scene. So go and check it out. It's a book that I've written myself. Did you know that I'm an author of sorts? I also have articles on my Substack, and the scene is available on the Substack if you subscribe at the $8 tier. If you subscribe at the $8 tier on the Patreon, you also get access to the scene. It's all there on the Patreon and the Substack as well, or you can get it from ko-fi.com, which the link to that is at myfamilythinksimcrazy.com. It's impossible to miss. It's right there on the front page. Just keep scrolling until you see it. It's a green cover page, and the word scene in orange right there on it. So with that, folks, thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you next episode. Until then, immerse yourself in the moment wherever you are in the now. MFTIC. Yeah.
broadcasting the moon matrix from the lunar surface. They want you confused, like you never knew your purpose. Hopping through the portals, dismantling the machine. My family thinks I'm crazy, I can't believe what I've seen. Memories of a war, the Pleiadians and Anunnaki, stuck within the genes of a copy of a human body. DNA fractal, the universe within me. Epiphanies of science is hoarded by the Illuminati. Puppet masters know the power of the mantra. Repeating mad lies till it has an effect on ya. Subliminal messages hijack your perception, tricking the population with holographic projections. We see through it, and the system is unraveling. I'm astral traveling through the library of the Vatican. On a sacred journey, I embark with the squad. Forever spitting truth like Mark on the pod. Gotta know the facts, never hold back, cause I ain't getting caught up in the soul trap. I dissect the fabric of reality, looking for the answers, searching through the galaxy. You might be feeling stressed out. Depression, anxiety is no measure of health to be well adjusted to a sick society. You don't even know how powerful you are. We the ones who gonna expose the whole facade. I awoke in a deep underground military base. Zero recollection of how I got to this place. Alien corpses floating in glass cylinders. Must have been extracted when they crashed into us. Animal hybrids contained in the cages. A lion with the eagle head. Monkeys with reptilian faces. Losing my mind and I'm feeling desperate. I look around the room and I see no sign of an exit. All of a sudden the wall flickers away, revealing a hangar full of spacecraft. My getaway, I run to the nearest one. See a guard, knock him out, rob him for his plasma gun. Hop in the ship, take the controls. They highly intuitive, I figure it out easily. Lift off, accelerate through a tunnel until I see the light. Fly into the sky, get flanked by six F-35s. Gotta know the facts, never hold back, cause I ain't getting caught up in the soul trap. I dissect the fabric of reality, looking for the answers, searching through the galaxy. You might be feeling stressed out. Depression, anxiety is no measure of health to be well adjusted to a sick society. You don't even know how powerful you are. We the ones who gonna expose the whole facade.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.